Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Do you remember when I found out that Bernie Mac had died?
Yes.
Mm.
How many years later?
It was definitely at least 2016. I want to say 2017, 2018.
Do you want me to tell the story?
Go ahead.
So I can't remember what I was watching.
It was that Ashton Kutcher movie with Natalie Portman as well.
Oh, yeah.
What was it called? No Strings Attached or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. Where no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. That's absolutely wrong. It wasn't that movie at all.
It was.
But it was another movie with Ashton Kutcher.
No, it was.
And a romantic interest, I believe.
So, what's it called? It's Ashton Kutcher and he's telling racist jokes to the family. So he's dating, what's she called? I can't remember the actress's name. But she brings him home for the holidays.
Yeah.
And, yeah. They're like, he doesn't like Ashton Kutcher because he's white. So he's trying to embarrass him all the time. And he's there like, tell us a joke. Tell us a black joke. And Ashton Kutcher's like, and he's like, no, it's fine. And he tells one, it's funny. He tells another one, it's funny. And then he tells a third one and the whole table erupts. And they go, yeah,
we're getting off the point here.
Oh, yeah. So we start watching that and Megan went, you don't really hear of Bernie Mac. Like, what's he done recently?
What was the last thing you saw Bernie Mac in?
I said his funeral.
Where he went, he's dead. And I was like, what? Nobody told me.
Yeah. It's a bit like I was listening to some music and one of the songs I was listening to was Nelly.
Yeah.
And Megan went, I'd finished listening to music and she went, I like that song what you're listening to earlier, Nelly's new one.
Nelly's new one, yeah.
And I'm like, Nelly's new one? It's about 10 year old.
It was 10 years old at the time, yes. That was another one. And that was another flub on my part.
Yes.
You did it the other day to me. Same thing. It was a song and you're like, oh, I like this new song. I was like, that's about 15 years old. You've matched my energy now.
Yeah.
But no, I bring this up because we all have gaps in our knowledge. Happens to the best of us.
Some more than others.
Well, this is the thing. Neil has actually outdone me on this one.
Oh.
Do you remember what you said to me the other day?
I say a lot.
It was in a similar vein of something that just, for some reason, somehow has escaped your knowledge.
No.
Neil said to me that he was surprised nothing had ever come out about Gary Glitter.
Oh, yeah. I've never read out about him.
There's literally a section of his Wikipedia page about sexual offences.
Yeah, I know. You nearly fell out of the car.
It's longer than the majority of his Wikipedia page, by the way. So I may not know that poor old Bernie Mac has passed on.
Mm.
Or I may not keep up to date with the latest fucking tunes.
From Nelly.
Can anyone really blame him that one? Do you know Nelly performed in Dublin years ago? I think I've told you this, right?
Mm.
So Nelly has a couple fucking bangers.
Mm.
No one gives a shite about anything else he's ever done.
Yeah.
He was performing Hot in Here, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he sang a line, then held the mic to the audience. The audience, silent. And even Nelly was like, oh my God. But it's Nelly. You told me years ago, oh, I'm a massive fan of Nelly, like when you were a kid.
Mm.
And I was like, what?
I did not say.
Nelly's biggest fan.
I never said I was a massive fan. Why you've just said that?
Well, you said he was one of your favourite artists.
I just said I listened to him.
You're the only person who's got Nelly in like his top 10, surely. Nelly is like a, you know, he's a hit maker kind of thing. He's got a few bops.
Mm.
But
yeah, I never said he was one of my favorite artists.
You said something along the lines.
I listened to him when I was younger.
No, no, you were like, oh, I used to love Nelly. Or so you like, you made a point of how much you enjoyed his artistic pursuits.
Hmm.
He did actually, now here's something you'll like. Nelly did, you know, Nelly's a country boy.
Mm.
Country boy. He did a song with some fella.
Some fella.
Some country artist.
Right.
I cannot remember his name. Years ago, this is probably like 20 years ago, I did like that song. I like the crossover, you know?
I'm trying to think.
It's like the two of them pining after their loves, yeah?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the two, like the two different stories, but they're both feeling the same way about these women.
I don't know what you're on about.
I'll play for you later. Okay. You, I mean, if you've never heard it, which I highly doubt is Nelly's number one fan.
I will have. I've just got a bad remember.
Well, you'll love it because, like I said, the Nelly-ation of the situation and the countryside of it. It's a perfect song for you, Neil.
So, we have a shout out.
We do indeed.
So this week, we have Anne.
Anne.
Now, I have a few. How did you do?
I've won, but it's a good one, I believe.
Let me guess. Anna, yours is going to be something like Annapalooza or something like that.
Little Mortal Anne, E.
You're calling her an orphan?
I'm calling her mortal.
Just call her an orphan.
I wonder, Anne, are you ginger? Because that would really fit with what I'm doing here. Do you at least have curly hair? Give me something to work with here.
Well, if she's old, I want to call her analog.
Okay. If she's old. Okay.
Well, analog.
Well, I've just asked, you know, about her appearance, so I'm not doing so well here either.
And her parents. if she's British, as I can't remember if I looked at the where we're sending the package to. If she's British, she'll get this. Anwa.
Very chavvy of you.
Yeah, Anwa. And then I thought what would be most fitting for the podcast, anarchy.
Very good.
Yeah.
I like that.
You know, like anarchy.
I've just thought of another one.
Yeah.
Andrex. So let's just call her toilet paper.
Shit roll.
Yeah. Thank you, TP.
Thank you, TP. Okay, I thought I did well with the anarchy.
No, you did, yeah. I like Little Mortal Anne, E.
Well, you would. Well, I really like analog.
Yeah.
Oh my God, if she has a massive shit, analog. Anne and a log.
And that fits with the Andrex.
Oh.
Okay, yeah. So I think we'll go toilet paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shit roll.
Shit roll. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. Mortals, just to let you know, my birthday's coming up. So if you're feeling generous and you'd like to subscribe to Patreon, head on over, join Anne, E, Little Mortal Anne,
shit roll.
E, shit roll, and get your content early and ad-free. If not, as we always like to say, please leave a rating and or review. It does really help us out, and we appreciate you.
I just thought, Anna, like, she's going to fit in on our Patreon because it's a shit house.
Shit show.
Shit house. Like,
mm-hmm.
Shit house is a toilet.
Yeah. It's more of a shit show. You're calling our content a toilet.
Well, it's our Patreon members, our family members, like a mortal.
Or shit houses.
Yeah. Well, they are to me. So, yeah.
It really are a family. You're like the kind of, I'm the supportive mother. I'm there like, bring the community together.
And with me, they're like, keep an eye on him.
Well, I was going to say, you're like the father. You know, like when you see the dad's like, I don't want any fucking pets in this house.
Yeah.
And then later on, after the fact.
Yeah.
It's.
I warm to them.
It's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah. So, what have you got for us today?
Today, we're going to be talking about the murder of Bonnie Haim.
Okay. Bonnie. There's Anne Bonnie. Anne Bonny. So that's another patron.
There's another one.
Anne Bonny.
We're still going to call you Toilet Roll, though.
One of the greatest pirates there's ever been. Don't know what happened to her. She just fucked off. But this isn't about Anne Bonny.
No.
Bonny.
Haim. Bonny Haim.
Yeah.
By 1993, Bonnie Lynn and Michael Ray Haim had been married for 5 years, welcomed a son together, and were living on Dolphin Avenue in Jacksonville, Florida. The young couple also worked together at Michael's aunt and uncle's construction supply business. Michael was the manager and Bonnie was their accountant. But their relationship was far from perfect. In fact, it was reportedly fraught with control and abuse. Michael's aunt, Yvonne, who they worked for, said that Michael often became abusive towards Bonnie at the office. And on at least one occasion, she had witnessed this abuse become physical.
No good.
Quote, one day they got into an argument in the parking lot. She came in crying, and he had slammed her hand in the door, and her nails were broken, and she was very upset at that point.
Fucking hell.
It does make you wonder with that, if he felt so confident to do this outside of the home in front of others, what exactly was he doing behind closed doors?
That's what I was saying fucking hell to, because it's usually hidden.
Yeah. And he's also not just in front of people, in front of their family.
Yeah. And no one went out and twatted him?
Well, I don't know how involved they got. I do know that Bonnie and Yvonne were not just, you know, family members, not just related, but they were best friends.
Right.
Whatever the case may be, Bonnie had had enough, and she decided that she was going to leave Michael. The first thing she did was open a bank account in her own name. And in order to keep this from Michael, she had the bank statements mailed to her workplace. But when Michael found out, he was less than pleased, and so Bonnie was forced to close the account. But that didn't deter Bonnie, and instead she decided to give cash to a friend who would hold it for her. Next, she put down a deposit on an apartment, which she planned to move into while Michael was away on a business trip, and she also enrolled their son Aaron in a new preschool.
That's not going to go down well.
Well, everything was beginning to fall into place and Bonnie was close to getting out. Then on the 6th of January 1993, 23-year-old Bonnie comes home from work at about 7:30 p.m. She was due to soon head back out to Yvonne to finalise some plans for a friend's baby shower. But instead, Bonnie rings Yvonne in tears at around 8:30 p.m. Quote, she was crying and she was upset. I asked her why. She said that she and Mike had gotten into a discussion. And I asked her if she wanted me to call her back later and she said no, that she would just talk to me in the morning. Michael later said that they had gotten into a fight and afterwards, Bonnie left the home at around 11 p.m. The next morning, Bonnie doesn't show up for work. And later that day, Bonnie's handbag was found in a bin behind a Red Roof Inn near Jacksonville International Airport. Her discarded bag was clearly not the result of a robbery, as Bonnie's credit cards and hundreds of dollars were still within her wallet.
He binned cash?
Well, it was just her bag thrown, like, straight into the bin.
That's mad, isn't it?
Well, this was actually when Bonnie was reported missing, once the bag was found, and Michael was then taken in for questioning. After Bonnie left the night before, Michael and his mother claimed that he went out looking for her. In total, Michael spent 45 minutes out searching for Bonnie. Bear in mind, he failed to notify authorities when Bonnie did not return home or make contact, but he did manage to call in sick to work.
45 minutes.
45. Now, just imagine you and I got into a fight. And I leave. I storm out.
Yeah.
You'd probably, you know, because you're upset as well. You're probably going to give it a bit. But if, like, let's say, what was it? 11, she left. If I'm not home by, say, 12:30, you're probably going to try and ring me. And if you're not getting through, you'd at least, even if you didn't think I was going to reply, probably say to my mum or someone, can you try calling her?
Yeah.
And then if all else fails, you're going to be out looking for your partner.
We don't really do that, do we? When we row, we stay in each other's company to annoy him.
Is that how you view it?
Yeah, I'll do something like, say if we've had a row, yeah, and there's not much conversation going on. I'll do something like, I'll wash the pots, but I'll do it wrong. So you're watching me do it wrong. I'm trying to make you speak.
Do you actually?
Sometimes.
That's pretty fucked up, but no, I mean, I'm not really into that. I understand having to walk away, you know, leaving something there.
Yeah.
You're only making it worse. But the whole storming out thing, I find it quite disrespectful. You know, it's kind of like, I'm done with this. I'm going. But, you know, if it was the case, you know, for someone like Bonnie, obviously, I completely understand her wanting to leave. I'm talking about a more ordinary argument.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, if we've got into an argument, the way I breathe pisses you off. I don't have to do much.
Well, I think because when you argue, you argue to argue. I argue with the intention of coming to a resolution.
If you call me an idiot or a fool, that's not a resolution.
I don't ever call you an idiot. A fool sometimes, yes.
And what's a fool?
I don't so much, I wouldn't call you a fool. I don't call you names in the middle of an argument. You know, if that's more like lighthearted day to day. If you do something really fucking irritating, whatever, you fucking fool.
Yeah. In fact, the worst thing you've ever said to me in an argument is, don't be that guy. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
I will put your head through that fucking wall. Well, I wouldn't. Hang on. No, because Americans take everything literal.
Mm. And you never do that. That's actually quite concerning when you think about it, because you are a very literal person.
Mm.
You know, and the fact that you say, I'll put your head through a wall, I'm taking that as a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But to be fair, on that note, I said, oh, don't be that guy. And you told me it bothered you and I didn't say it again. And you know what I mean? I've never said that to you since, unless I'm like deliberately taking the piss.
Yeah.
You know, adapt, overcome, whatever else Bear Grylls says.
Conquer.
I don't think, is it conquer?
I don't know.
Hmm. My point is, I find new things to trigger you with.
Mm.
Bonnie's car, a 1992 champagne-coloured Toyota Camry, was later found in the airport parking lot. But her car key was found in her bag, and the spare car key, along with her house key, was within the couple's home. The detective said, quote, what was unusual was the positioning of the driver's seat, which appeared to be farther back than would have been comfortable for Bonnie. It was more in relation to someone about Michael Haim's size. After the vehicle was processed, we found a shoe print on the driver's side floorboard. It was a very pristine print. So once they checked the shoe print left in the car, it was a match to Michael's size 10 Nike sneakers.
I think I've just solved this case. It's him.
Crack the code.
Yeah.
Ivan, who was not only Michael's aunt and their employer, but also a good friend of Bonnie, said, quote, she lives for her child. If she had an ounce of life in her and was able to pick up a phone, she would call me or someone, or at least try to get in touch with her son. The family passed out nearly 6,000 flyers across Jacksonville in hopes of locating Bonnie, and Ivan was actually the one who called a news station to get some coverage on the case. And she sat next to Michael as they were interviewed. And I do wonder, I mean, obviously she wanted coverage on the case, but I feel like she wanted for Michael's behavior, his demeanor, to be documented on film, or at least apply pressure to him.
Yeah, yeah.
The reporter who interviewed them, she actually said that she knew something was off about him. During the interview, she didn't feel like there was any urgency for Michael in locating his wife. He kept kind of looking away when speaking about Bonnie, and at one point, Michael brings their son out and asks him, quote, where's mommy? Where's mommy? She felt it was an odd thing to say to a child whose mother is missing.
Yeah.
And when she got back to the station, she remembered telling her co-worker, I think I've just interviewed a killer.
Like, Hands down.
If we had a child,
yeah,
and you went missing, this is a 3-year-old child, right?
Hmm.
I can't imagine saying to my baby, "Where's daddy? Where's your daddy gone?"
You wouldn't say it's a Norman.
It's a, no, that's so twisted, don't you think?
Yeah, like, so Megan's parents used to have a couple of dogs, and so you'd got Otis and Marley, who were brother and sister. Marley died, and your dad used to say to Odie, "Where's Marley? Where's Marley?" You sick bastard. Fucking got the dog walking around looking for his sister.
He was topsy-turvy. My dad didn't mean it in a bad way. You know, it was kind of like, oh, look, he misses her. But it was like, no, stop. Poor
Where's
little
Marley?
Lad.
Where's Marley?
But you get what That's I mean.
Sick game.
You get what I mean when it comes to Michael. It'd be different if he went, you know, like, you know, you love your mammy, don't you? Kind of, you know, that kind of,
yeah.
We love you, we miss, you know, in case she was watching kind
you
of thing.
You want mummy back?
Yeah. Yeah. But it, kind of the, where is she?
Yeah.
Where is she, Aaron?
Yeah. It's not, you want mummy to come home. Tell mummy to come home. Yeah.
On the 8th of January, the couple's 3-year-old son, Aaron, was interviewed by Child Protective Services.
Aaron.
He told them, quote, "Daddy hurt mommy, daddy shot mommy, and my daddy could not wake her up."
Can snitch. Fucking hell.
Well, with this, police had their sights set on Michael. Everything pointed to him. But without any solid physical evidence, charges against Michael were never filed.
But there's an eyewitness account. Daddy shot mummy.
There is, but he's also 3 years old.
So at what age can you use him as an eyewitness?
No, but he's not telling Child Protective Services, "I saw my daddy, you know, get a knife. I saw my daddy do this." He's saying like the very kind of little segmented bits, at least from what was reported, you know, and it's a 3-year-old child. So there is a slight concern over what he's saying.
Yeah. Because he shouldn't know the term "daddy shot mummy."
Yeah, that got me. It's the hurt couldn't wake her up. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Daddy shot mummy?
Daddy got his Glock out and shot mummy with a 9mm. And you're saying he said it in bits? Yeah, but he's 3 years old. He's probably got a vocabulary the same size as mine.
No, but that's what I'm not shitting on the child here, Neil. I'm just saying in terms of using it as evidence.
No, but that's
it's going to be contested.
But that's what I'm asking you. At what age is it okay to use him as an eyewitness?
I can't answer that.
Oh.
What age would you feel is appropriate?
If a 3-year-old boy came up to me and said, "Daddy shot mummy," I would charge him.
I mean, but there's so many cases of...
And call the kid a snitch.
There's so many cases of children who are old enough to verbalise, "I do not want to live with mummy," or I don't want to live with daddy.
Yeah.
But because of a custody arrangement, they're forced into that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
And in the UK, it'd be "daddy twatted mummy." It'd be something like that.
That's what they'd say. In the aftermath of Bonnie's disappearance, Michael moved to North Carolina, and the couple's 3-year-old son was placed with family before later being adopted. Now, Michael definitely seems like the glaringly obvious suspect here, and for good reason. But there were still some people who were defending him, one of whom was Bonnie's father.
Oh.
In relation to the shoe print found, Bonnie's father stated, quote, "If it's his footprint, I'm not sure it means anything. My footprint is in my wife's car. That doesn't mean I've ever done her any harm."
That's a real good point. But it's the seat back.
The seat back, and how the detectives described, they said it was pristine. It was like the last print made kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was described as a sandy footprint.
Right.
You know, so like, where were you just walking?
On a beach.
Bonnie's father also questioned Aaron's statements. Quote, The credibility of a child is something that you have to judge in perspective. Which, now, I can take both of his points. That's fair. But I'm not quite sure why he seems to be fighting Michael's corner, unless it's just a case that he was in denial.
Right.
What Aaron said was very...
Like he didn't want it to be him.
Well, he doesn't want his daughter to have been murdered.
Oh, okay.
What Aaron said was very concise, and I don't doubt it for a second. But I do understand that kids, they'll just make shit up. So I can understand the reluctance to use that as like solid evidence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you don't have to, you should absolutely be concerned if the child is saying this, but it doesn't mean that daddy shot mommy.
Yeah.
But there's a high likelihood daddy did hurt mommy. But on that note of kids just, you know, coming out with absolute shite, Neil, weren't you one of those little freaks who described having like a previous life as a soldier or something like that?
Yeah. How old was I? 3, 4.
Same age as Aaron.
The oldest. Yeah. I don't remember this. It was my parents told me that I described what I was wearing. Was it like, I can't remember. I remember telling you.
You were like a soldier and you said something, you described your armor or something, was it?
Yeah. But I can't fucking remember it fully, but it was like the yellow and something. I can't remember.
And your parents were like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
See, do you know if my kids...
Well, then my auntie, who's, you know, a bit smarter than my parents, she's got more knowledge than my parents.
Yeah. She's the one you pick for the pub quiz.
Yes. Yeah, and she... Was it like a Highland clan colour or something? And she was like, he wouldn't know that.
What, yellow?
I think it was yellow and black.
Oh, okay, you gave a combination. I thought you were saying, like, I said yellow, and she's like, oh, well, that's a colour.
No, I'd said something about, I think as a kid, I was like, I was wearing a skirt.
Right.
Or I was wearing a dress.
But you have
And it was like black and yellow.
But you have Scottish family, so obviously you don't remember, but could one of them not have talked to you about something? Like, someone in your family going, oh, did you know that's...
No, I don't think Klansmen came up much when I was a toddler.
Klansmen?
They are Klansmen.
Yeah. Just careful now.
Why?
Klansmen.
That's what they're called?
Yeah.
No, you got me worried now. Is that a slur?
KKK.
Oh.
Yeah, but if we had a kid and they started coming out with this shit, yeah, I'd be like, he's a little bullshitter. He's going to be a little bastard.
No.
Bullshit artist, that lad.
It's completely different. When I was 3 years old, it was 1992. It's a bit different now with how much knowledge can be just grabbed like that.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you fucking read something.
But I bet you came from a household similar to myself where the TV was always on in the background.
No.
I don't believe you for a second.
Well, if it was, but it were like repeats of Only Fools and Horses and
Yeah, but you're trying
towers.
To tell me, even on the TV, an ad, like a promo for a new show coming on, you couldn't have seen something and you just repeated it back, but made it about yourself because that's what you like to do.
Right, I'm fairly certain it was black and yellow. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look up Highland, Klansman, yellow and black. They're families, aren't they? Highland. MacLeod?
Is that real? Duncan.
Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod.
Oh my goodness. Are you related to that fictional character?
I was actually getting a bit worried because I know there's the Johnston clan. So I was like, fuck, could there be more to this? What colour's the Johnston clan? Hang on.
What colour is your Johnston?
What did you just say? No. Johnston clan is like green and blue squares with yellow lines.
So it's absolute bullshit.
Why, it's yellow. How did we get onto this?
Because Aaron's statements were being questioned for their credibility. And I was making the point that you too Well, no, not you too, because Aaron's not a bullshit artist. I fully believe everything he was saying. You were a little bullshit artist as a child, I believe.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the case.
Mm-hmm.
As time went by and the case went cold, some members of the family grew concerned as to how Michael was seemingly allowed to get away with this, whereas others, namely Bonnie's parents, accused Aaron of being, quote, brainwashed into believing his father was to blame. They believed that Bonnie had chosen to abandon her family.
No, like, it is very rare a mother will walk away from her kids.
It's rare, and I think with women, they tend to have more of a plan. Well, Bonnie did.
Yeah.
Bonnie had the plan to, you know, she was setting it in place. So why would she drop all of that? Not at least collect the cash from her friend.
Yeah.
There would be some type of trail.
It makes more sense that he found out about the apartment and everything else and he did her in.
Yeah. Well, years later, Aaron filed a wrongful death suit against his father. He won, and as part of the settlement, he was awarded his childhood home, which his biological father, Michael, had been renting out. In December of 2014, Aaron began renovations on the home which he had once shared with his mother. His plan was to put the house up for sale, and one of the jobs he had planned was to remove the pool. Now, during the demolition, he accidentally burst a water pipe. And in order to repair the leak, he had to smash through concrete slabs.
Oh my God. No. Yeah.
So he smashes through the concrete with a sledgehammer, and as he sifts through the soil underneath, he hits off of something. He described what he found as a hard, fibrous material similar to a coconut, and it was also wrapped in plastic. He picked it up to examine the object, and he handed it to his brother-in-law who was working with him. They then look back into the hole, and they can see teeth and the top portion of the eye sockets of a skull. They then quickly realised that they were holding a human skull fragment. DNA testing would later confirm that the remains belonged to Bonnie.
Fucking hell.
Talk about fucking trauma.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Just think, if he weren't renovating the house.
Yeah.
Still be unsolved.
Well, the removal of the pool, his great aunt, Yvonne, she'd actually tried to dissuade him from doing so because it was too much work. You know, that is a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd kind of gone, oh, maybe you're right. And then thought, you know what? No, I want to do it. And yeah. Had he not, you know, this discovery would have never been made, or at least, you know, maybe if the new owners had decided to do something.
Yeah. I couldn't live in Florida without a pool. You'd have to have a pool. It's one of them places, isn't it?
Very hot.
Hmm.
Hmm. Now, near her body, a .22 caliber shell was found. And who had owned a .22 caliber rifle?
Aaron. Not Aaron. That's the son.
Hmm. Old Mikey over there.
Yeah, Mikey boy.
Bonnie's death was ruled a homicide, although the medical examiner could not determine an exact cause of death. There was a mark found on the pelvis consistent with a gunshot wound, quote, a circular defect consistent with an injury that took place during life or right at death. Before the remains were identified as belonging to Bonnie, her father was still fighting against it, claiming that he did not believe they would belong to his daughter due to the location of the burial. He thought they must have been buried previous to her living there.
He's very naive, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and just say he was in denial. But I can't understand. You know, like I said, it's not as if he's saying, no, she can't have been murdered. It seems a lot of it was almost like fighting Michael's corner. I can't understand that.
That's what I mean. Like, even if you're in denial, you still get to a point where there'll be some sort of information that'll make you just switch.
Yeah.
It's like you switch on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, like I said, both of Bonnie's parents believing that she chose to abandon the family, I assume it was easier for them to assume she's still alive and be mad at her.
And selfish. Then, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Then face the reality. Yeah.
Yeah.
But luckily, Bonnie's father was not in charge of the investigation, and in 2015, Michael Haim was arrested in North Carolina. So, like we mentioned, before Aaron was awarded the home, Michael had been renting out the property. In the rental agreement, it was said that they were not allowed to dig in the backyard or allow their dog to dig in the yard. I mean...
I wonder why.
Yeah, look, not that you necessarily would in a rental property... Would that not strike you as odd?
Yeah.
If it was worded more as like, you know, no landscaping outside of general maintenance type of thing,
yeah,
I would understand. But specifically digging...
A dog.
It's a bit dodgy. During the trial, Michael maintained his innocence and stated, quote, I loved my wife. I would never hurt my wife. She'd been unhappy for maybe a month, maybe two. I can't put my finger on how long. But it had been going on where she wasn't her bubbly self like she was. The prosecutor said, quote, It's pretty odd to think that a woman is going to leave her son, abandon her job, and leave her house without a set of keys she normally uses, leaving all her earthly belongings inside. So like you said, Neil, they believe that Michael knew Bonnie was going to leave him, and that she would also take her child with her.
Yep.
The defense argued that the case was built on, quote, innuendo and hypotheticals that don't exist. They argued that the investigation at the time was conducted in a sloppy manner, and that they did not properly document the search of the property, and also that the police had honed in on Michael from the start.
Okay, fair enough. But if you list everything, the fresh fucking footprint in the car, the seat adjusted for him,
mm-hmm.
the body in the fucking garden... With his gun?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I will say, in fairness here, right? The investigation did seem a bit fumbled, to be fair, right? According to reports, her handbag, the evidence there, had been contaminated. The documentation regarding the search failed to note whether a cadaver dog had been sent to the property. And they also neglected to follow up on a tip, which said that Bonnie had been buried in the backyard.
What?
Yeah. Now, I wonder, was that a neighbour who heard, saw, whatever, knew of the abuse?
Yeah.
You know, what have you. Or was it a tenant after reading the sus rental agreement and just said, I think my landlord's hiding something?
Oh. Okay.
The defence stated, quote, Michael Haim is not guilty, not because I say he's not, but because that's what the law is in this case. You will find a lot of reasonable doubt in this case. They're going to stretch a lot because they don't have the evidence they need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. They'll take anything and stretch it to get that conviction because that's what they do. That's what their job is.
Okay, but you know when the original investigation,
mm-hmm.
did he have an alibi?
Well, he said that he'd been home. Bonnie had stormed out. Then after a while, he went out and looked for Bonnie while his mother was in the house looking after the child.
Right.
So yes and no, you know what I mean.
I wonder what he did for that 45 minutes. Do you just think he went for a couple of pints?
I'd say he literally just went for a drive.
Right. I used to do that in America, don't they? Just going to go for a drive.
In response, the assistant state attorney said, quote, The truth about this case demands justice. Bonnie Haim cannot get justice. It's up to us, the living, to find justice for her. Testimonies included two inmates who said that Michael had confessed to them that he had killed his wife, the social worker who had interviewed Aaron in 1993, and Michael's aunt and uncle who worked with the couple witnessed his behaviour and said that they had never believed him when he said that he had nothing to do with her death. Aaron also spoke at the trial and said, quote, It was very tough. I think everyone can imagine, even if it's not a loved one, finding a skull and picking it up and what that would do to somebody. Not to mention that it was your mother.
And you smashed it. Put a spade straight through it, like.
The prosecutor stated that, quote, On that day... That mother and child reunion brought Aaron Fraser face to face with the product of the defendant's ill will. It brought him face to face with the product of this defendant's hatred, and it brought him face to face with the product of this defendant's spite and evil intent. The prosecutor described Michael as, quote, a guy who's really good, really accomplished at burying the truth. Oh, see what he did there?
Yeah, buried the truth. Because he buried the body.
Yeah.
Which was the truth. What do they mean by product? What's the product?
The murder was basically the result of his hatred, his ill intent. Spite.
How's that a product?
It's the result, the end product.
Right.
It took the jury 90 minutes to return a verdict. They found Michael guilty of second-degree murder. They also agreed to three aggravating factors which could impact the sentence which Michael received. These factors were that the crime was committed in the presence of a family member, tampering with evidence, and inflicting severe emotional trauma on the victim's family. But they did not find that the murder was committed in a heinous, atrocious, and cruel manner as an aggravating factor. The recommended sentence was 7 to 22 years.
Seven?
Yeah, second degree, you see. But under sentencing guidelines, the judge was able to circumvent the recommended sentence as long as he issued a written explanation as to why. And his reason why was because of the, quote, severe physical and emotional trauma which was inflicted upon Bonnie and Michael's son. Quote, the record supports the trial court's conclusion that Aaron suffered severe emotional trauma from his mother's murder. Aaron not only witnessed the murder, but it also led to him being separated from his entire biological family. After the murder, Aaron was adopted by non-family members. He has been in therapy since the murder, and he still suffers from depression. Aaron had to endure not knowing what happened to his mother for over 20 years before discovering her skeletal remains in the backyard of his childhood home. The record also supports the trial court's conclusion that the victim's family suffered severe emotional trauma from not knowing what happened to the victim for over 20 years. Which is fair.
Yeah.
Right, this is fair.
Yeah. Can't imagine, like, the trauma he's gone through finding that.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you see him speaking at the trial, you can see, you know, it's kind of like you can physically see how it's affecting him, how it has affected him. On the 21st of May, 2019, Michael was sentenced to life in prison. The prosecutor said, quote, the truth was always out there, buried in their backyard.
Fuck it, like.
This prosecutor is really, do you know what I mean? He's wanting a book deal or something, yeah. I feel.
But they all tend to be like that in America, don't they? They all have the Hollywood dream.
I feel, maybe this is just me, specifically in my mind, like a Southern attorney.
Yeah.
You know, they can be very colourful with their language. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Following his biological father's sentencing, Aaron said, quote, I don't really feel a whole lot different. There's a sense of relief that we don't have to continue fighting the fight. I'm kind of glad that it's over. Just glad that there's some kind of end to this process. As long as I can remember, I was scared that he was going to come and get me. I slept with a brick under my pillow until I was probably 12 years old. I still have it. I always think I see people behind me. Whether that's all stuff that would have happened regardless of this, I don't know. When speaking of his mother, Aaron said, quote, I have no memory of her. But we recently got a Christmas of 92 VHS tape turned into a DVD, and I watched it this past week. So I got to see her at Christmas. That was special. Michael later appealed his sentence, and argued that the statements made by his then three-year-old to Child Protective Services should not have been allowed into the trial. He also took issue with the 22 caliber shell casing being allowed into evidence, and that he should not have received a life sentence.
Why shouldn't that be evidence?
Because it was in the yard. Like, he's kind of saying it was in the yard. You can't, like, link it.
Next to a skull?
Yeah. Well, luckily, his appeal was denied. Also, Michael, why don't you just tell us what evidence you would like them to include?
Yeah.
Fucking prick. Now, 2 days before Michael was sentenced to life in prison, friends and family of Bonnie gathered to remember her on what would have been her 50th birthday. Quote, As we celebrate our friend and our sister and our beloved family member, Bonnie Lynn Pasciuto Haim, we're thankful for the love that we have for each other, for the love that she had for each of us as a part of her life. We are honoured by each of you. You've all been a part of her life, whether you knew her when she was alive or you discovered her afterwards and you fought for her. Being the middle child, she was always the peacemaker, always trying to share love with everybody. So yeah, this would have been what she wanted for her 50th birthday. That's also wild as well, that Bonnie would have only been 50 by 2019.
Yeah.
Because she was already married for 5 years with a kid, you know, very settled by that point in her life, you forget that she was just 23 at the time of her death. But yeah, that is the murder of Bonnie Haim. Neil, thoughts?
Like, it was obvious, but it was him. I do have one question, though. It were bugging me, but I didn't want to interrupt your flow. So when she was missing,
mm-hmm.
So they didn't know she was dead. She was missing.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Michael look after Aaron? Why did Aaron have to get adopted? Go to a family member and then get adopted?
So I'm not entirely sure what the situation was. So in relation to his family, let's say they just couldn't afford to or couldn't physically house. I don't know what the situation is there.
Right.
In regards to his father, I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah.
Why, like, did he not want?
That's what I mean.
Did Aaron not want to be with his father?
Mm.
I don't know. So Aaron's aunt, Bonnie's sister, he stayed with her.
Yeah.
Immediately after what had happened. And she would take him to visitations twice a week to see his father and grandparents. And she said that he was a trooper. He would go to these meetings, keep it together. But as soon as he got home, he would become really, really upset. She described how he would get into the home, just fall to the floor, pound his fists on the ground. He was a kid.
Yeah.
He didn't know how to express himself properly. But imagine, let's say Aaron's like 4 at the time.
Mm.
Watching a 4-year-old be that exhausted, so mentally drained.
Yeah.
You know, by that interaction. It's horrible. And she said that she would allow him to do this until he tired himself out and was able to put him down for a nap.
Fucking hell.
Was it twice a week? Yeah. Twice a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's not her decision to bring him for visitations, but you're having to put this child through that.
Yeah.
Twice a week. I have to say, my heart fucking breaks for Aaron. Like, this poor fucking lad, been in therapy since he was 3 as a result of this trauma. And I think it would be completely understandable if he had distanced himself from the family. But being adopted, he did lose relationships with his biological family, as well as being told that he had been brainwashed, you know.
He's gone through all that trauma, like you just said, and gone through therapy since he was 3.
Yeah.
To then find the body.
Yeah. He was just kind of getting gut punch after gut punch. But that man still fucking showed up for Bonnie, spoke with a trial, and fair fucking play to him.
Yeah. So, oddity.
Cotard syndrome.
What?
Cotard syndrome.
Cotard.
Cotard. Did I just say it weird? Cotard.
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 Cotard. Yeah.
So Cotard.
So it's something to do with cots.
No.
Babies, cots.
No, I was about to start telling you what it is.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, well. Cotard syndrome is a rare neuropsychiatric condition which causes a person to experience a range of delusions varying in severity, which include believing that they do not exist, that they are deceased, are missing internal organs, lacking blood, or that their body is in a state of decay.
Richard Chase.
Yes, I wrote that down.
Oh.
I was going to say to you immediately, that's who comes to mind.
He was squeezing oranges in his ear.
And he believed his organs had been stolen. And all this. Why does it come back around to Richard Chase so often? Do you not feel like he's like a running thing?
He was just very peculiar.
Yeah. It is most commonly an extension of severe depression and those with psychotic symptoms, but it is now less common due to early intervention. In terms of medical conditions, it has been associated with syphilis, typhoid, migraines, and epilepsy, among others.
I have heard that. Syphilis, like, makes you go crazy. I've heard that. Oh, who, like, pirates would go through it. Anne Bonny. Yeah. We're back to Anne Bonny. You know, like Blackbeard.
Yeah.
Apparently, was it Blackbeard who had syphilis?
I think, yeah. I think they said about Blackbeard, yeah.
And he went insane.
Mm.
Like, he was just firing cannons at everyone. No, he fucking were. People were scared.
He was a bit of a bastard, wasn't he?
People were scared shitless of him.
Yeah, well.
And it weren't him. It was the syphilis.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're fucking laughing at.
Because you sound like so, like... You got a lot of passion there and you got a lot of fucking empathy going on. It wasn't him. It was the syphilis, you guys.
No. Right. We talked about a guy who fucking hacked someone up on a bus in Canada.
Yeah.
You felt more sorry for him than you do Blackbeard. You were like...
I didn't tell you my feelings.
He wasn't well. Well, Blackbeard wasn't well.
I never made a comment about my personal feelings towards Blackbeard.
Well, you just took piss out of me.
I just wasn't expecting you to feel so much towards Blackbeard.
Well, I'm very passionate when it comes to syphilis.
Yes.
I think if we get another cat, call it syphilis.
Siffy for short.
Yeah. Or less.
It is reported to be most present in women and in older age groups. It's thought that Cotard syndrome develops over time, and it was proposed that there are three stages: germination, blooming, and chronic. Also known as Cotard's delusion or walking corpse syndrome, it was first recorded in 1880 in Paris by physician Jules Cotard. Jules wrote a case study about a 43-year-old woman named only as Mademoiselle X. Quote, "Delusions, negations extended to the metaphysical. Mademoiselle X believed that, quote, she has no soul and accordingly she does not need to eat in order to live."
Well, you do.
Well, she claimed that she had, quote, "no brain, no nerves, no chest, no stomach, and no intestines."
How'd she say that with no brain?
It's a delusion, Neil. You know what I mean?
Well, I just solved it for him. I'd ask him that. I'd go, "You ain't got a brain? How'd you fucking say that then?"
Well, she believed that she was made up of just skin and bones. So, yeah.
So, how's she breathing?
Neil, it's not... She's experiencing delusions. She's not well.
And skin and bones? Well, muscle, how are you walking? How did you open that jar of jam?
A jar of jam. No, but in all seriousness, it is, you know, devastating. Because of these delusions, starvation is a factor.
Mm.
If you believe you're dead, why would you believe that you need to eat to sustain yourself? You know? So it's not even... It's a massive issue. You know what I mean? It's not kind of like a knock-on thing that, oh, that's slightly bad. It's like, they can die of starvation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I might try that. I'm going to phone up work. Can't come in. Why? I'm dead. I've got cock.
What?
I've got cock syndrome.
Please ring up and say I've got Cockard syndrome.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, I'm looking up now, I'm not finding anything about it. I told you it was rare.
I might do that as well. You know, then walk into work and then say, first worker I see, they're like, "You're right, Neil. You can see me."
I like how I tell you this and right at the end I say, "No, but in all seriousness." And then you make a joke of pretending you're experiencing these delusions. That's very, very tactless.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's you. You're a tactless bastard. He never said you weren't. And that's my fault for thinking anything other. But I do love, I have to say that you said Richard Chase straight away. I was going to kind of mention him because straight away I was like, oh, I never heard this mentioned in relation to him.
Mm.
He must have had this. How did no one at any point... unless they did. And I just never read about it. But yeah, that very much sounds like old Richie over there.
Fucking does. Squeezing oranges on his ear. Mm. People are nicking his vitamins. Just buy multivits, like.
Just buy some multivits. What is that? Americans love them Flintstone ones. You always hear him going on about that.
No, but how much fruit is? Just get some multivits. Take one of them a day.
I like a multivit juice. That's nice. It's good, isn't it? That's the best juice.
Depends if they're too carroty.
I love the carrot.
Shove it up your ass.
No, I do. Well, I don't think that's going to get the vitamins in.
Yeah. Well done.